Welcome back to the Hollow Sky Podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Steven.
And Kyle.
And it's Monday Hollow Cult. You know what that means. You've chosen us to hang out with you and kickstart your work week. Kyle's bringing us something today.
I am. It's a little bit different.
What you got for us, Kyle? Give him a little sneak peek.
Mr. Manson and the CIA.
Two people that I don't like.
Heard that.
Charles Manson and the CIA.
Yeah.
So stick around for that. If you're new here, me and Kyle like to talk about some things, do some housekeeping, some podcast jargon for the first few minutes of the show. You're not into that, fast forward to about the 6 minute mark and you'll find the crux of the show. If you are into listen to us chat, feel free to hang out. Hang out and make friends with us. It's a good time. If you're not new here, welcome back, weirdos. You know the drill. Check us out at all our social medias, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, Twitter, Discord, Reddit. Search up the Hollow Sky Podcast. We'll be there. Come and hang out. Join the cult. And unlike the Manson family, we're cool. Yeah. We're a cool cult. So, yeah. If you'd like to, or where am I at in there? Here I am. If you have a paranormal experience that you'd like to share and be featured on a future episode of either this show or our paranormal experience show, Kyle's got some deets for you.
HollowSkyPodcast@gmail.com. It's in the show notes. You can write your story out in as much detail as you possibly can, or record yourself and shoot it over via email. That works too. It'll get put in the catacombs where we will later dig it out and make you famous.
It's that easy.
It is.
That easy.
It really fucking is.
It may take me 5 years to get to it, but time doesn't exist.
The catacombs are deep, man.
Yeah, and time is a human construct.
I agree.
So what's 5 years to some people is 2 days to others. It's science, really. I don't know what to tell you.
Ask Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Yeah, he'll tell you about time.
Yeah.
He's smart.
He is.
He's a smarty pants. If you'd like to support the show, plenty of ways you can do it. First off, the Patreon, that's getting revamped. You're going to want to go over there and look at that. You have a bunch of different tiers for different things. Me and Kyle's got some irons in the fire that's going to equate to some new Patreon content. Kind of divide and conquer, get you guys some goodies over there. Beyond that, we've got the store, HollowSkyPodcast.com. All kinds of merch and stuff. Keep an eye on that. We're going to be getting some 2026 merch out. Get stoked. Just get stoked. Best thing you can do to help us out is share the show word of mouth. Just keep it running. You know, like the YouTube, subscribe. Just that one little action that takes no time at all helps us out exponentially when it comes to being found on YouTube. Hype the episodes, all kinds of things. Anything you can do. Doesn't cost anything, just a couple seconds. It helps us out, and we appreciate it. Also, share the show word of mouth to all of your weirdo friends, other weirdo podcasts you'd like for us to link up with, just the whole thing. Just the whole thing. Just keep the Hollow Cult growing. That's what we're doing in 2026, trying to get us on more ears. You can also leave a 5-star rating and review wherever we listen to podcasts or at our socials. And if I find them, I'll gladly shout you out. This week's 5-star rating and review comes to us from the old Facebook and our friend Dave. Dave says 100% rating. In all honesty, the best pair of podcasts I've ever listened to. It's great how you both bounce off of each other. You can obviously tell you've been close friends for years. Crack on and stay safe, you weirdos.
Yeah.
We have been friends for years.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a good observation.
And we've been weird for years.
True.
And into weird stuff. Like aliens. And cryptids. And ghosts. And
that's us.
The CIA.
That's us.
It is us. The final thing you can do to help support the show is support our wonderful sponsors, which keep the wheels turning here at the old Hollow Cult Laboratory. And you're about to hear from them right now. Hey, Hollow Cult. We're right into the new year, and if you're like me, you're in the mindset of wanting to get healthier. But I feel like I'm just guessing as to which habits actually matter for me specifically.
I don't know which supplements to buy, which vitamins to take, or which workout trends I should be following. It's easy to get overwhelmed at the thought of it all. But this is where True Diagnostic comes in. True Diagnostic helps you find the exact supplements and lifestyle changes that can make a difference for you and which ones you might be wasting your money, time, and energy on. If you're spending money on supplements, workouts, and wellness trends, it's worth knowing what is actually going to move the needle for you. With True Diagnostic, you can choose your test. With True Age, it measures your biological age versus your chronological age and your current pace of aging. It also gives you your top three aging actions that you can take to slow or reverse aging. With True Health, it tests 105 plus biomarkers, including vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, and fatty acids to understand your body system's health right now. It focuses on energy, metabolism, inflammation, and nutrient status today and gives you your top three health actions to work on for the next 90 days. Or for your best value, you can get the combo kit, which combines the True Age and True Health tests in one package. It shows you how fast you're aging and how healthy you are right now and gives you both three aging actions and three health actions to work on each quarter. The process and experience is simple. Order online and the kit ships right to your door. It's quick, simple finger prick at home, then drop it in the prepaid return package. Your only job, follow the three most important actions you can take for 90 days, then retest to see your progress. True Diagnostic is trusted by top longevity clinics and health professionals, not just consumers at home. Right now, our listeners can get 20% off at truediagnostic.com using code HOLOSKY at checkout. That's truediagnostic.com. And use code HOLOSKY for 20% off today. Choose True Age, True Health, or the Combo Kit as a one-time purchase or a subscription. Hey, Holocult. Did you know that there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your front door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you can get 20% off your first order at mood.com with promo code HOLO1. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. They have Sleepy Time Advanced gummies for a mind-soothing calm each night. They also have Morning Delta 9 gummies for an energizing, focused mental boost to start your day. Mind Magic gummies for focused, deep work and enhanced creativity. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a large selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much anywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get in the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your front door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered directly to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned before, HoloSky listeners gets 20% off their first order with code HOLO1. So head to mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code HOLO1 when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Be sure to try it today at mood.com. And just like that, we are back. And Kyle's going to throw us into the magical world of Charles Manson and the CIA. Just off the title alone, I'm not particularly certain who's worse.
That's a good statement/observation. It's a good one. I don't think either one of them are very noteworthy.
Nerds.
They are nerds in the bad way.
Not cool course. Nerds.
Yeah, not cool nerds.
Dorks, if you will.
Yeah. Anyways. So everyone is at least vaguely familiar with the Manson family. Not Marilyn Manson, but Charles Manson. Today, we are going to be diving a little deeper into the Manson family and the CIA connections. I was actually watching a TV series called Wayward on Netflix. pretty good show. And it kind of, you know, prompted me to look into this case. So here we are. November 12th, 1934, Manson was born to a 16-year-old named Ada Kathleen Maddox. His birth certificate actually only lists his name as Manson.
That's it?
Yeah. It's weird, right?
So he started off as a persona.
Yeah, pretty much. Wow. It's weird. That was weird. And a little bit before his birth, his mother actually married a man named William Eugene Manson. So essentially where the Manson comes from. It seems that his parents would go on benders quite often. And occasionally they would actually, or on one occasion, they actually end up robbing and assaulting a man, which caught them 5 to 10 years of imprisonment. Or 5 and 10 years. They each got separate sentences.
Generational scumbagness.
Oh, yeah. 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 And that's what I'm trying to do here is kind of paint his picture before all of the crimes. It actually just keeps going downhill from here. His mother was a fucking train wreck. After she gets out, she meets back up with Manson. He said it was one of the happiest moments of his life. However, she would keep drinking and get arrested for things like grand larceny. In an interview with Diane Sawyer, Manson states that when he was 9 years old, he actually caught his school on fire.
What the fuck?
He was also in trouble for truancy and petty theft quite often. In 1947, at the age of 13, he was actually placed in the Guybelt School for Boys in Terre Haute, Indiana. This was a school for male delinquents that was actually ran by Catholic priests who apparently would beat the shit out of you for any type of infraction, often using wooden paddles or the leather straps.
He did not have a good start.
Oh, no.
He is really the like poster boy for the nature versus nurture. What creates a villain?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
If he had a better home life, would he have turned out as bad? Because it really like humanizes him saying that one of the happiest moments of his life was getting to see his mom again.
Yeah.
And then she was just a shitbag.
Yeah. I think it's a solid point that if his home life would have been better, he probably wouldn't have been this.
This wouldn't have happened. Yeah.
Yeah.
It does, like, just hearing that, like, I know he had some people do some shitty things, really shitty things, but hearing him being like, it was the happiest moment of my life to see my mom again is, like, really, like it really personalizes him, I guess.
Yeah. Manson actually ends up escaping that place, the boys' home. He ends up sleeping in the woods, under bridges, anywhere else he could essentially find shelter until he makes his way back home. Only to have his mother take him right back to that place.
Oh my God.
So no, like zero fucks from his mom, which sucks. 10 months later, he escapes again, heads into Indianapolis where he commits his first documented crime, which was robbing a grocery store. He was actually doing this to find something to eat. However, he ends up finding a cigar box with some money in it, which he uses it to rent a room and get some food. Manson tries to go straight. He gets a job. He begins delivering messages for Western Union, but that wasn't exactly cutting it, so he began to supplement his wages through stealing. He was caught, and a judge sent him to Boys Town, which was a juvenile facility in Omaha, Nebraska. Within 4 days of being in this place, Manson and his new buddy, Blackie Nielsen, were able to get a gun and steal a car, committing 2 armed robberies on their way to Nielsen's uncle's house, which was in Peoria, Illinois. So that's pretty fucking close to here.
What?
Yeah.
How old was he at the time?
I'm not exactly sure, but he was still in a boys' home, so he had to have been in his
teenager.
Teens.
Teenager, yeah.
Yeah.
Within 4 days, got a gun, stole a car, committed 2 armed robberies.
Yep.
Working his way back east.
Yep. And then technically, that would be a federal crime because he crossed state lines as well in a stolen vehicle.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
So,
Jesus.
Nielsen's uncle was a professional thief, to which he made the boys his apprentices when they finally got there.
Oh my God. It's just one shit bomb after another.
Yeah.
After another.
Yep.
Blackie Nielsen didn't stand a chance because everybody in his life was a piece of trash.
Yep. Pieces of trash seem to magnate toward each other, and there you go.
Trash of a feather flocks together.
That's right. Trash of a feather burn together. However, his uncle must not have been a very good teacher because within 2 weeks, Manson was arrested, to which he was then sent to a very strict reform school in Plainfield, Indiana. This was a rough patch for Manson because apparently under encouragement from a staff member, some of the boys at this home would SA Manson repeatedly and give him beatings. He ends up running away from the school at least 18 times.
Then they keep taking him back. Yeah. My question was, before things got really dark there, is how is he simultaneously the best criminal and the worst criminal at the same time?
That's a good question, because he's very good at escaping things.
Yeah, he got a gun and stole a car to get away from the boys' town, and then he was arrested within 2 weeks of doing petty robberies.
Yeah.
And
it's an interesting dynamic.
18 times?
Yep.
Why, like, at that point, I don't even know. At that point, like, what are they even doing? What are they even doing? Just not locking the doors?
I don't know.
Just letting them do whatever? Does that count as an escape if he just walks out?
Yeah, I don't know. So, from there, Manson and two other boys actually end up at escaping and robbing gas stations in an attempt to drive to California in stolen cars. They were then arrested in Utah, which lands him federal charges because, like I said, he was driving stolen cars across state lines. He ends up in Washington, D.C.'s National Training for Schoolboys. From there, he was given an aptitude test, which deemed him illiterate, even though his above-average IQ of 109. His caseworker also said he was aggressively antisocial, which, I mean, kind of relatable at times.
Kinda, yeah, kind of tracks.
The spiral from there continues because in October 1951, a psychiatrist recommends he be transferred to Natural Bridge Honor Camp, which is a minimum security prison in Virginia. His aunt shows up and she's like, listen, I'll take him in, you know, I'll take care of him. And he ends up having a parole hearing in February. So she shows up, I think, 2 months before his parole hearing saying, hey, when he gets out, I'll take him in, I'll take care of him, you know, which would essentially kind of help him during his parole. However, In February of 1952, he's caught essaying a boy at knife point, which leads him to be transferred to a federal reformatory Pittsburgh, Virginia, where he commits 8 serious offenses. 3 of them involve SA.
Oh, my God.
So he just completely flips script here and goes on straight rampage mode.
Because I was thinking to myself, you know, there's no, like, hero in this story to save him when he was younger.
No.
I was thinking every turn, every position that this kid is thrown into is more terrible than the next. I'm like, there's got to be somebody on the planet that's like, maybe I can help him. Which then you start talking about his aunt, and I'm like, okay, maybe this is it. No. He has gone off the rails.
Yeah, he just flies off the deep end.
Which, I mean, he's been in a cycle of degradation and abuse his entire life.
Yeah.
So at some point, you're bound to just, I know it's not an excuse. Being abused doesn't give you an excuse to be an abuser. But at some point, you're just going to fly off the rails in that path, you know?
Yep. And because of all these crimes that he was committing there, you know, all the 8 serious crimes, this now gets him moved to a maximum security prison in Ohio, which he was expected to serve his time until he was 21. So before 21, he's in maximum security.
I can't. That's crazy that this all happened before he was 21 yep. years old.
However, he did get out a little early due to good behavior, which is essentially batshit crazy to me. In 1955, he married Rosalie Jean Willis. Willis. He knocks her up and decides to steal a car in Ohio and drive to Los Angeles, which he gets picked up for. So once again, he gets bagged with federal crimes. After a psychiatric evaluation, he's given 5 years probation. However, a fail to appear in Florida for the same fucking charge, driving across state lines with stolen vehicles, lands him 3 years in the pen, all because he didn't appear. While in prison, his wife gives birth to Charles Manson Jr. His wife visits for a while until she finally moves on and ends up leaving with another man. 2 weeks before his parole hearing, Manson tries to escape by stealing a car, which goes wrong, and he catches 5 years probation, and his parole is denied. September 1958 rolls around, and Manson has 5 years parole. By November, this dude is pimping a 16-year-old girl and getting Jesus. Support from another girl with wealthy parents. In 1959, he pleads guilty to trying to cash a forged U.S. Treasury check, which he stole from a mailbox. This all gets him 10 years suspended sentence and probation. However, he decided to go to New Mexico with two women and try to pimp them out, which he gets questioned for. He gets questioned for violating the Mann Act. This gets dropped and he disappears and violates his probation. 1960, and he gets an indictment for violating the Mann Act. Manson gets picked up in Laredo, Texas, returned to Los Angeles, where his violation for the check gets him his 10-year sentence. So in July of 1961, he gets transferred from McNeil Island in Washington, where he ends up taking guitar lessons, or he gets transferred to McNeil Island in Washington. And here, he ends up taking guitar lessons from Barker Karpus gang leader, Alvin Creepy, I guess it'd be Karpus, whatever, however you want to say that. Another inmate gives him contact information for Paul Kaufman, who is a producer at Universal Studios in Hollywood. He also hung out in prison, which this is fucking crazy to me. Manson actually hung out with Danny Trejo in prison, and they took hypnosis sessions together.
What?
Wrap your brain around that one.
What?
I did not know that at all. So at this point, you can clearly tell Manson has screws loose. He's got an extremely troubled life, but he hasn't gone like full crazy deep in yet. I mean, he's there, but we know he goes farther.
Yeah, he's on the diving board of the deep end.
Yeah, oh, yeah. So after his parole in 1967, he moves to Berkeley from Los Angeles, which could have been a probation violation. However, he makes a few phone calls and gets it all figured out. His supervision gets turned to a man named Roger Smith, who was working with the Height Ashbury Free Medical Clinic, where the Manson family end up frequenting pretty often. Roger Smith and the clinic's founder, David Smith, received funding from the National Institutes of Health, also reportedly the CIA, to do things like study LSD, study methamphetamine. And they were doing this specifically on the counterculture movement. The patients at the Height Ashbury Clinic became subjects of their research. This is where Manson gets introduced to LSD and begins to use it frequently during his time there. Roger actually wrote that Manson's personality change was the most abrupt he had seen in his entire career.
Change for the better?
No, probably the worst.
How could you get any worse than his personality?
Oddly enough, Lewis Jolin West, a.k.a. Jolly. So Jolly West, he is a big name in the MK Ultra documents. He was an LSD researcher. He supposedly just happened to live right down the road.
Weird.
From the clinic.
Weird.
Smith also allowed West to recruit clients for his experiments. West also was the only scientist in the world to wrap your brain around this. West was the only scientist in the world to predict the emergence of LSD cults. So let that sink in. He was a LSD scientist for MKUltra, and he just so happened to predict the emergence of LSD cults.
To know exactly what would happen when he put the LSD into the count, what do they call it? Counterculture?
Yeah.
So the hippies.
Yes. So and if you remember, the hippies were all about love and peace, but for some reason, the government and everybody really wanted to take it to them.
Yeah. So he's like, I know all this stuff about LSD. I predict that if I release this drug into the population, there's going to be cults.
It's weird, right?
So let's release this drug into the population, and now there are cults. For the record, you don't have to do LSD to join the holocult.
No.
LSD is not a requirement.
Nope.
See, already cooler.
Yeah, we're on the up and up. So, during his time here, Manson ends up reading a book called Stranger in a Strange Land. Now, a brief synopsis of this is, it's kind of about a Martian that gets brought to Earth from Mars. Not so much an alien, to my understanding, but it's like at one point humanity flies a ship to colonize Mars. Everything kind of goes wrong. They end up becoming in contact with this guy from Mars, picks him back up, brings him back home. They bring this person back and he's figuring out life on Earth again. And he goes through many religions, learning, and then essentially creates his own, almost creating a cult.
I see where this is going.
Which may have helped Manson in his belief system because it does parallel some of his ideas and actions. Manson also began to preach from things like Scientology, which he studied while incarcerated. Even when he got out, he met with Scientologists and attended several parties for movie stars. Manson also took influence from the Bible, Dale Carnegie, and the Beatles. All of this combined allowed him to supposedly build a following rather quickly. Some even suggest that he took some philosophy from the Process Church of the Final Judgment, which believed that Satan and Jesus would reconcile. They would come together at the end of the world to judge humanity. While building his cult, he chose mostly broken women. He also used LSD and unconventional sexual practices, which we know this is linked to you know, forms of magic and forms of creating and shattering the personality to help create altars.
Emotional manipulation, yep. And psychological manipulation.
He was trying to turn his followers into empty vessels that would accept anything and everything that he said. Manson would encourage group LSD trips and it was reported by some of the people attending that Manson would actually, when they were taking these trips together, he would actually give himself much lower doses so he could further manipulate the crowd.
Yeah.
Manson even hung out with Dennis Wilson of the Beach Boys, where he actually helped Manson create music. And that music apparently was done solely for Dennis Wilson and Terry Melcher. Wilson actually ended up recording a Manson song called Cease to Exist and reworked the name to Never Learn Not to Love. They asked Wilson why Manson wasn't credited for writing the song, and he said that Manson actually gave up all publishing rights for about $100,000 worth of stuff, quote-unquote stuff.
LSD.
Probably LSD.
It's crazy to me how many, I guess maybe not popular at the time, but also popular at the time and popular now, like famous figures cross paths with Manson.
Weird, right?
Yeah.
It's not something that I would have thought.
No. No. I knew about the Beach Boys thing, but I didn't know about the Danny Trejo thing.
Me either.
Like, that's strange.
It's really weird. I didn't know about the Beach Boy thing. It's just fucking bizarre.
It's weird.
And at a certain point, Manson and his family evolve into this doomsday cult. Manson became fixated on an imminent apocalyptic race war. In late 1968, Manson adopted the term Helter Skelter, which was taken from a song of on the Beatles' White Album. And Manson used it to describe this upcoming apocalypse. Now, you do a little bit of circling back, namely to the point in the Manson's life where he came into contact with the Haight-Ashbury Clinic. This is kind of where obviously the CIA gets introduced. And there was a man named Tom O'Neill who wrote a book called Chaos, the Manson Murders. He found out that Manson would frequent the clinic with his quote-unquote family. O'Neill also discovered that scientists were working secretly for the government that were trying to do exactly what Manson had done to the women who were following him, creating people that would kill without any regret or remorse. They would do it on command, and in some cases, not even recalling how or why they did it. Some of these scientists came into contact with Manson during this time. Like I said, Jolly West. It's also weird how it lined up so well, because apparently Manson and the family showed up to treat their essentially promiscuous lifestyles, trying to take care of venereal diseases, pregnancies and stuff. That's why they went to this clinic. Also, oddly enough, Roger Smith, who was his parole officer, just happened to have an office at the clinic too.
Interesting.
Now you insert, as we mentioned, Jolly West. His name, like I said, has been brought up through countless times in connection with MK Ultra. West called the clinic a laboratory disguised as a hippie crash pad. This lab was known by West where he was able to recruit subjects for the study of LSD. LSD, for those that don't know, was an extreme key part in the MK Ultra experiments. Yeah. O'Neill has several documents that would come to prove that West was financed by the CIA to work for MK Ultra, namely in experiments with mind control. In these documents, West discussed not only how to conduct experiments to implant false memories, instill specific mental disorders, and induce trance states. On top of all of that, he was able to hide them as well. So could this explain how Manson became a essential philosopher overnight? Mm-hmm. West wasn't a fringe figure. He evaluated Jack Ruby after Ruby killed Lee Harvey Oswald. He proposed using hypnosis to erase memories. He openly discussed the ability to induce psychosis temporarily or permanently using chemical and psychological stressors. When West referred to the Haight-Ashbury Free Clinic as a laboratory disguised as a hippie crash pad, he wasn't speaking metaphorically. He was describing a real-world, uncontrolled environment where drugs, trauma, and sexual activity and authority figures intersected, exactly the conditions MKUltra researchers believed produced the most malleable minds. Because if you remember, it's been talked about countless times. I know Steve and I have talked about it. You remember the MK Ultra experiment where they dealt with prostitutes and Johns,
yep.
And they would dose the Johns when they came in, so yeah. On and so forth.
What is that project?
It's like Midnight or something, yeah. Like that. But that was, you know, that was another experiment that was taking place. As O'Neill keeps digging around, he began to wonder if Manson really did become a success story for the CIA. essentially a programmed assassin on top of being able to create other mindless assassins. During all of this, Manson was able to get his followers to completely abandon their sense of morality and their code of ethics. He was able to convince them that there was no such thing as evil. LSD would help Manson and this quest because he was able to use it to create personality changes and fix it to make it last after the LSD trips ended.
Project Operation Midnight Climax.
Yeah, that was it. Midnight Climax.
Yeah. I was looking for that while we were going on.
One of the major questions that starts to surface and get asked is, how did Manson in under a year become so efficient at doing all of this? He was a con artist, but everybody who knew Manson in prison prior to becoming Charlie Manson, all of them took him as a joke. When they were questioned, they took him as a joke. He was a nobody. Nobody fucking took this guy serious at all. Then you also have the oddity that seems to pop up, the Helter Skelter narrative. This was pushed more by Vincent Bugliosi. I'll just say Vincent B. He's got a weird-ass fucking last name. As I stated, but again for clarification, Manson apparently wanted to start a race war. However, he apparently preached how a race war would go underway, only leaving the Manson family alive. But Manson would be the chosen one to lead everyone because the winners of this race war weren't smart enough to lead themselves.
It's interesting, like you say, how nobody paid any attention to him, because like I'm big into true crime, and Manson was never really one that like stood out to me, because people would talk about like how charismatic he was to his followers and stuff, but then you like watch his interviews and he's just a crazy asshole.
That's what he looked like to me. It was just a crazy fuck.
And then I forget, like it for some reason it passes my brain that he was so into LSD. Which, if you got a bunch of whacked out people on LSD, you can tell them whatever the fuck you want to tell them, you know? Right. Especially if you're not whacked out on LSD.
Exactly.
So hearing that kind of brings things into perspective for me.
Now, this is also something I didn't know, because I've always heard the Helter Skelter in conjunction with Manson, right? I didn't know it was about a race war. I also didn't know that a lot of people are under the impression that the prosecutor, Vincent B., wanted to sensationalize this case in order to push a larger book sale. That way he could make a ton of money and live off that for the rest of his life, which apparently that's what ends up happening. Furthermore, on this point, his co-writer was actually sitting in the courtroom collecting notes for this future book. O'Neill thinks that the reason why this Helter Skelter narrative was being pushed because Manson actually feared retaliation from the Black Panthers at the time, because he had shot a man named Bernard Crow, and that happened during a drug deal where that had gone bad. Manson actually assumed Bernard was a part of the Black Panthers, and Manson also assumed that he killed him because he shot him. Neither of those statements were actually true. Bernard was not a part of the Black Panthers, and he did not die. It would make sense if Manson was fearful enough, especially since the Black Panthers held a reputation in the time, that Manson would actually fear retaliation from the Panthers. Therefore, he would spin a tale to his followers, like kind of making them have his back to protect him, so to speak. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because he's afraid of this big retaliation. He obviously needs people to help him. He can't do it on his own. So he spins a narrative for his followers. It's another reason why you had a paw print and a political piggy written on the walls in order to implicate the Black Panthers of this crime.
Yeah.
Also, another suggestion is that a motive behind these murders was that Charlie or Charles was worried someone in his camp was a snitch. So he wanted to commit crimes with them to implicate them if anything ended up going sideways. That way, both of them, the snitch and him, have something to hold over each other, so to speak.
Mutually assured destruction.
Right. So that makes sense. You know, it all sounds, you know, it's kind of mundane and rational, but a larger piece to this puzzle is a simple fact that during 1967 and 1968, while on parole, Manson gets picked up half a dozen times, none of which ends up violating his parole somehow, and he gets sent back, or he just gets let go. In fact, Roger Smith, his parole officer, who has an office at the clinic,
which is so crazy.
Crazy. This motherfucker, and not to mention Roger Smith sounds like an agency name, just throwing that out there.
Yeah.
But this guy would actually write letters to whomever, I guess the parole board or whoever, telling them how Manson was doing great. He's doing awesome. He's a changed man. All the while, he's being picked up handfuls of times for bullshit that should have landed, should have violated his parole and got him sent back to prison. So there's an odd piece of that puzzle.
Yeah, yeah.
You want
your experiment out there.
Yes, exactly. During the Tate-LaBianca murders, it took the LAPD months to pin the family for it. Evidence actually shows that law enforcement actually said the crimes were not committed, or I think they're saying the crimes were not connected at all. The sheriffs also informed the LAPD about the Hinman case, which had some of the same details that these other murders did. But the detectives said they were looking into narcotics traffickers for the case there. Even weirder is that a raid was actually conducted on the Span Ranch where the family was staying. They find stolen guns, stolen vehicles, stolen credit cards, and underage runaways.
Oh.
Only everyone who was arrested in that raid was released 3 days later.
What?
Yes. And I would assume that all of this combined would be more than enough to put somebody in jail for a little while.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a lot of
stolen things.
It's a lot of felonies.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah. Stolen guns, stolen credit cards, stolen cars, and underage runaways.
Yeah.
They're like, you know what? We'll let this slide. We got you, dead to rights, but we're going to let this one slide.
Yep.
What?
So essentially the underlying narrative is that someone wanted the family out there.
Which is weird.
Yeah. That really only happens one way.
It's weird.
It's not Roger Smith being his buddy.
No.
Any one of these failures, you know, missed parole violations, dropped charges, ignored reports could be explained by incompetence. But you put them all together, they tend to form a statistical anomaly. Manson was arrested repeatedly for offenses that sent other parolees back to prison immediately.
These dudes lit the fuse and they're just waiting for the bomb to go off.
100%.
They're just waiting.
Without fucking question, man. Like,
come on, Charlie. Come on.
Dude.
Quit robbing liquor stores and start a race war.
Yes. And I mean, this would have sent other parolees back to prison immediately, yet he remains free, mobile, and he gets more and more dangerous.
That is fucking bonkers.
It's crazy. You know, whether this was negligence, institutional blindness, or something more deliberate, the outcome was the same. Charles Manson was allowed to continue. But why? It seems that one, you know, clear conclusion / conspiracy seems to pop up. The government wanted to send a message to everyone doing drugs and marching against the war. A true narrative change is that the kids going out and becoming corrupted by the freedoms of the 60s movement would turn them into monsters. This whole peace and love vibe was a lie, which actually seemed to start to sway the public after the murders were publicized. Because after, I'm assuming before these murders, everybody was just kind of accepting the hippie. They were just like, yeah, whatever, you know. And then these murders happen and public sway starts to happen where they're like, wait a minute, are all these hippies like this? Are they all going to break into our house and brutally murder us?
100%. They're not peace and love anymore.
Exactly. They're
violence and murdering pregnant women.
Which is fucking crazy that, like, I mean, at the time, I guess I understand the confusion, but you look back and you're like, that's an obvious connection.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Everything changes after this situation. And even more so, O'Neill from the Chaos book, he's able to cite other programs that were running when Manson arrived in San Francisco. You have the FBI's COINTELPRO and the CIA's Chaos. These programs were designed to infiltrate left-wing groups like the Black Panthers and neutralize them, to do whatever it takes to make them ineffective and wipe them out. Which, if you remember, Manson and the family tried to frame the same Panthers,
yes,
that the government wanted to hammer down on.
Weird.
I mean, come on. It cannot be coincidence. Weird. It cannot be. Now, one narrative that is pushed around is that these murders took place because Manson wanted to take revenge on Terry Melcher, who was a record producer, and this was all due to something that happened in the past. Manson apparently believed that Terry Melcher lived in the same house, so when his followers got there, they killed whomever was in the house, assuming they had the right people, or they believed that they had already crossed a line that they couldn't come back from. Or it could have been that Manson, along with his family, went to the mansion, killed Sharon Tate, Abigail Folger, Wojcik Fryoski, Jay Sebring, and Stephen Parent. According to the testimonies, Manson wasn't satirized by the way the crime was committed. He wasn't satisfied by the way the crime was committed. He wanted to show everyone how to properly execute a murder. So he ended up taking them to Lino LaBanchia and his wife Rosemary's house and killed them brutally. It's believed that the CIA wanted to infiltrate left-wing groups, and on the orders from the agency, the family went in and committed these crimes. Manson had spent most of his life institutionalized. He was emotionally deprived, repeatedly abused, socially conditioned to obey authority, and already skilled at mimicry and manipulation. In other words, he was not a blank slate. He was a perfect accelerant. LSD did not create Manson. It removed what little restraint he had left. COINTELPRO and Operation Chaos were not passive intelligence gathering programs. They were designed to fracture movements from the inside. From the inside, through paranoia, false attributing internal conflict and public delegitimization. The Manson murders accomplished all of that without a single government memo being leaked. They discredited the counterculture, intensified fear of radical politics, and justified aggressive policing. Whether intentional or not, the outcome aligned perfectly with the objectives of these programs. By the late 1960s, MKUltra had moved beyond labs and universities. LSD had escaped containment, and the counterculture became the perfect testing ground. Transient populations, high drug use, distrust of authority, and zero credibility with law enforcement. If something went wrong, it wouldn't be traced back. It would be dismissed as hippie insanity. The most effective intelligent operations don't require direct orders. They require conditions. Once those conditions are set, people like Manson emerge organically and do exactly what the system needs them to do. He destabilized movements, radicalized violence, created headlines, framed enemies of the state, and justified repression. all without paperwork. Jolly West wasn't orbiting Manson by chance. He was positioned exactly where outcomes like Manson could be observed, studied, and quietly buried once they went public. West knew what LSD cults would look like. He predicted them, and he also placed himself where they would form. It's not a coincidence. It's anticipation. Intelligence history is full of individuals who are allowed to operate past the point of danger because their behavior produced valuable data. When Manson violated parole repeatedly without consequence, it didn't signal incompetence. It signaled observation. After the Tate-LaBianca murders, the counterculture died overnight. Peace and love became synonyms with insanity. Protesters became potential murderers. LSD became a threat instead of a sacrament. The shift didn't happen organically. It was catalyzed by fear. By reducing the case to helter-skelter madness, Vincent transformed a politically explosive story into a digestible morality play. Insanity replaced systems. A lone man replaced institutional failure. The deeper questions were sealed off behind a best-selling book. I don't believe Charles Manson was a coincidence. I don't believe that the timing was accidental. And I don't believe the institutions surrounding him were as ignorant as they claim to be. Manson looks less like a lone madman and more like a stress fracture, where psychological experimentation, counterculture chaos, and state secrecy finally broke through into the open. If MKUltra was meant to control the human mind, then Charles Manson wasn't a failure. He was proof of concept. And that's where I'm going to currently leave that episode.
It almost makes you, it doesn't make you wonder. It's obviously, or it's obvious that they're kind of running the same playbook now. Our government.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
Misconstruing things and everything's being chaos. And
It's crazy. It's crazy. And like I said, you don't, it's one of those things too where it's so, and it does feel, you're right, it does feel like current times because
same playbook.
There's times I'm looking at situations that happen and you're literally like, this is not real. This can't, like it just seems so crazy, which I'm sure back then when this happened, because you looked at the counterculture movement with the hippies and shit. I would never look at a hippie and think I'm going to get stabbed in the face.
Not until
the Manson dilemma. And
they didn't think about that. They didn't have social media or anything.
They had the news.
They flipped the entire script just like that.
And that's crazy.
It's weaponized now with social media.
Oh, yeah. Stuff. Yeah. And that's what we were kind of talking about that earlier, yeah. Ironically enough, how we view this almost like they're perpetrating the world as being this burning barrel, just waiting to finally fucking blow.
Like they did with Charlie. They lit the fuse and they're like, come on, bud.
Yeah.
Quit fucking around.
Yep.
Quit robbing liquor stores. Quit stealing cars and do the thing.
Yeah.
Do the thing that we want you to do.
Yeah.
It also makes me wonder if how far back they had been
watching they had Manson.
Targeted him. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think it almost doesn't feel like it started with Jolly West.
It probably didn't.
Because when he was in prison the first time with Trejo, they had him in hypnosis classes.
Yeah, like him and Trejo were taking hypnosis classes together.
Yeah, which is like, they talked about it through the LS in and the
what
Jolly
are,
West.
What the fuck are the odds that you're hanging out in prison and somebody's like, yo, like you and me are in prison. I'm like, Steve, show me how to play guitar, dude. Like, I'd like to learn. I mean, what else do I have to lose? And then somebody's like, hey.
How about hypnosis classes?
Well, no, before that, I actually have the connections for Hollywood producers and stuff. You want those? I'll put you in contact with them.
Yeah, you want to make a hit record while you're in prison?
What are the odds of that?
Dude, it's
it can't be that coincidental through his whole story. It cannot be.
No, that was the first thing I was thinking. I'm like, Jolly West was just the man that ignited the fuse.
Yes, I agree.
The fuse was planted years ago, which could lean to how easily he escaped from all these places.
Could be.
You know,
maybe they tried it. Maybe they were, you know, releasing their experiment once in a while or seeing, you know, observing.
Yeah. If you really want to go down the rabbit hole, you could say that all these terrible things that happened to him could have been by design to create, like, he would create a vessel within his family using LSD. Maybe the CIA created a vessel via trauma, like MK Ultra.
Yeah.
From a young age with Charles Manson.
Oh, that could be fucked up.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, put him through all this. He got born into trauma, but then just pour it on him. Pour it on him.
And what's crazy, pour it on him. Like, I know this is kind of far-fetched, but it's not, because we look at, like, we've done a couple episodes where people are born into, like, having the intent to communicate with aliens or whatever. Like, we've had these genetic programs, so on and so forth, right? It's crazy to think that, what if they did the same concept with people like Charles Manson, where, like, at a young age, they influenced his mom to a degree to become a drug head, to become a piece of shit, essentially.
Could be.
Like, that sounds crazy, but not. That would be so fucked up to find out if there was truth behind that, where they selectively pick people throughout our time and they're like, listen, let's just fuck this person's life.
Yeah. It's almost like Project Oak Tree with the super soldiers. It's almost the exact opposite.
Yeah.
Like, take the strugglest of the struggles, have them create a child into the struggle, and let's see what we can do with it.
Yeah, let's see how
fucked up we can get it.
Yeah.
See if we can break it to, like, the point.
As far as humanity goes, that sounds like something a crazy ass scientist would do.
Sounds like something the CIA would do.
Right. I never did think about anything like that, but I could see it happening.
It's, yeah.
Which is fucking so scary.
It's crazy.
So scary.
It's crazy. I don't like it.
So scary.
It is nuts.
And I think I'm going to have a part two for Mr. Manson. I think I'm going to cover more of the murders in the next one and maybe see if there's some links to ritualistic occult type scenarios. I think I'm going to walk that road, see what we can't come up with. I think it'll be interesting. Oh, so yeah. There'll be a part two. We're going to cover essentially the rest of Manson's crime and see if it can be linked to the occult and rituals, which would be interesting to walk down that road.
Yeah, hell yeah. I didn't, like I said, Manson was never one of the ones that I really dove into, because I always just kind of thought he was a hack.
Mm-hmm.
And it made more, like, it makes more sense now, knowing that, like, he was using the LSD to manipulate the followers and this, that, and the other. But, like, looking into how he essentially was almost programmed to become a monster, become a problem.
Yeah.
Is a very interesting spin.
Yeah. And like they were saying, it's a great point. It's crazy to think that, like, somehow just magically, essentially overnight, even if the overnight is in context of a year, how quickly he was able to become this philosopher and prophet and just someone who it gets held in such high regards and can manipulate the fuck out of all these people.
Yes.
Just overnight.
Yeah. Because, like I said, any interviews that I saw of him, like, he just came across as a crazy asshole.
And you know what's nuts? You say that, but then remember when I was telling you about Mr. West there and the things that he was capable of doing, making people, like, inserting healthy, like, mental disorders, yes, to people, and also, yes, being able to cover them up.
Yeah.
So what if essentially they turned him into, like, a Manchurian candidate, where on one night he is this brilliant mind, this MC of the masses, and then with the flip of a switch, he's crazy drug head.
Yeah. Or it could be the other way. He's just a crazy drug head, and with the flip of a switch, he becomes this enigmatic, charismatic,
yeah,
leader to people who are already like I said, whacked out.
Yes.
You don't feel like it would take that much to become a prophet to a bunch of people who are empty and looking for a prophet, you know?
True story.
So yeah, interesting.
I know. There was a lot of information in there that I was not expecting. Because I'm not a big true crime guy. But I was watching that Wayward TV show, and it kind of fits this same narrative where you have this person who's manipulating people through LSD and stuff like that. And me and my wife were just talking, and I'm like, man, it sounds so much like the Manson case. Because I've heard the rumors about Manson being tied with MKUltra. And I was just like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to look into it, see what I can find. Yeah. And so that's how this was born.
That was dope. Interesting, informational.
It's weird.
Crazy show.
Did not expect him to hang out with Danny Trejo.
No. Did not expect him to have so many Hollywood connections.
Yeah, at the same time, it kind of fits the bill too, because Danny Trejo he's kind of a rough around the edges.
Makes you wonder if Danny Trejo was also in the program, but he went the opposite direction. We can take this other person from the exact same cell block and make him successful.
That would be weird. But it's an experiment, so it's possible.
It doesn't. I don't, after listening, it doesn't feel that far-fetched.
No.
You know what I mean?
No, I don't want it to be true because I like Danny Trejo.
Yeah.
But, I mean,
If it got him off of the path that he was on, that obviously put him in prison, maybe there is a good side to the coin.
Yeah, I mean, a success story where you could...
Yeah, if it was an experiment, you're going to have successes, you're going to have failures, depending on what you're looking for.
Sure.
You know, if you made a Manson to become a Manson, then they succeeded. But if you took a Manson and tried to turn him in to what's the word I'm looking for here? A productive citizen, you did not succeed.
See, I like that too, because if you look at it like that, where you're saying you got Trejo and Manson in prison, and we'll just say MKUltra gets a hold of them both, and they're like, let's see what we can do with both these guys. And they make one the absolute nightmare, and one, I'll say, is the absolute dream. Now, you could look at Danny Trejo's record, so to speak, and be like, well, he was in some movies and he's not that successful. But like Steve pointed out, and like I said during the show, at the time, they were in contact with a bunch of movie producers and so on and so forth. And if Steve's theory would be correct, Danny Trejo would be proof of concept, which means that they could also do this to politicians and world leaders.
Ding, ding, ding.
Because, like I said, Danny Trejo, it's not about anything other than he's proof of concept. They made him, like Steve says, great observation. He went from being in prison to being a successful actor.
Yep.
And that's proof of concept.
Because I don't know Danny Trejo's life story, you know, when he was younger, but something put him on the path to prison, which is the same path that Charles Manson took. And they integrated each other at that point. The thing that's selling it for me is that they both took the hypnosis classes.
Yeah.
There can't be a very high percentage of prisoners that took a hypnosis class. You know?
You wouldn't think so.
Especially when it leads, when Manson's path went to Jolly West, where Jolly West literally uses the term hypnosis in the shit he's dealing with,
yeah,
the stuff he's doing. Like, that's a stretch of a coincidence.
It is weird.
Strange.
I like it.
Strange.
I like it.
So, yeah. Hang out. Thanks for hanging out, first off. Keep hanging out.
And we got love for you, Danny Trejo.
Yeah. Shout out, Danny Trejo. Glad you got your life together,
buddy. Come on the show, bro.
Yeah, come and talk about weird stuff. I know you know some weird stuff.
Be awesome.
Yeah, hang out. Part two may be on the way. Might be on the way, so keep an eye out for it. But again, sorry, hit the mic with the water bottle. Nothing paranormal there. Thanks for hanging out with us. Thanks for kicking it. through the weirdness. Hope your work week's going well. Check us out at all the socials. Make sure you like and subscribe and check out the YouTube and all that jargon. Until we meet again, stay safe, stay weird, and don't trust the government because they're always up to some shit.